Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Simon Fitzpatrick's. Welcome to In My Spice podcast. Thanks for coming, man. I know it's early in Melbourne, and I've been waiting to have you on this podcast. And I think what many won't know is, I mean, I've been wanting to start this podcast, I think, for the last 2 years, and I've shared that vision with you for a while, and to have you on it right now, it's basically a privilege. But what I really wanted to speak to you about is more on the sports psychology side of things, the mental and the peak performance of things. And I guess the first question I got to kick off to you is, how important is sports psychology in sports?
Well, first off, Pete, thanks for having me, mate. Great to chat and great to be part of the podcast. Look, I think, sports psychology and, you know, sports mindset coaching. So kind of I'm probably more in that second thing of being in the mindset coaching. It's, to me, it's as important as the physical coaching. Which is obviously important and gets a lot of the recognition and focus. So you can kind of be as fit as you can be. And, you know, I think everyone, they say, I kind of feel everyone that makes a semi-final at the Olympics has probably got the physical gifts to win the final. And it's really about, you know, who does the right mindset work and gets themselves in the right mental state to get through to the final. 800 is a tough event, but other events as well. And then, you know, everyone in that final has the chance, especially in an 800 when it's unlaned and crazy things happen and, you know, maybe David Radish is no longer running. It's as important as a physical. It doesn't often get the focus of the physical, which I think can be a little bit to an athlete's detriment. I know you've really made a conscious effort to incorporate it as part of your training, and you've realized that there's more than the physical, there's the mental, and it's also a slow process too, I think, mate. I think that's where you've been working on for a number of years, and it really started to take shape for you 3 or 4 months ago. Like you've been working on it for 2 years, but once you got up to the Gold Coast and started doing those runs, and you know, you were happy, but you were satisfied, I guess, from running a 144 in Australia. That probably said a lot, and said the right way. And you know, then you went to Europe, and as soon as you ran your first race, I knew you could win the Olympics.
And I remember early on, I think maybe 2 years ago, or even earlier than that, we started working on your coaching programs. And what I really enjoyed the most was the first week, I think it was a vision week, which we had to kind of lay down everything. You know, it was just kind of like more than sports, and I really enjoyed that. It was like, I think we broke it down to categories, was relationships, sports, finances. And as an athlete first, I can understand why those things matter when we just basically needed to run fast. But why is vision so important and clarity? I remember you trying to drill that, and I struggled to understand that, and it took time.
Yeah. Look, I think from a vision standpoint, and like there's lots of corny metaphors you could say, but basically, you know, a ship that leaves a port with no target, it just kind of go around endlessly and so forth. And it's quite surprising for an athlete. They can get so used to the routine of training and doing the training and racing and doing training and racing and meet and championships that they don't have that clear vision and as to what they actually want to achieve per year, per 4 year system and so forth. And I think, you know, the need to have that clarity helps you with the good times, helps you with the bad times, just provides that direction. So if you've got, you know, a clear vision of where you want to get to, and it's easy to say, but, you know, for you, your vision was to win the Olympics, you know, to win a medal at the Olympics, I probably think that's a fair thing. That's a fair assessment. The better the color, the better. But that kind of helps you as well you know, the peaks and troughs that come in a racing season. So if you have a bad race, you can kind of dust it off a bit easier if you know where you're headed, because you can have a bad training session. It doesn't mean that you're not still trying to get to where you need to. So I think the clarity of vision is so important. And I think, as I said, you can get caught up in the routine of getting up, having your two coffees, going and training, doing that thing each day. It's just a really good guidance point. It helps you get back to where you want to get to. But I think, you know, you mentioned as well, and that's probably a big thing from myself with the kind of the mindset, is I don't think you can't be necessarily thriving in your sporting life and struggling in those other components of your life. And that's why we focus on those other things. And, you know, that's probably why, for me, no surprise to see how much the public loves you, because I know all those different components that make you up, and how important your family is, how important your relationships are with your closest friends and so forth. They have a bearing on how you perform on the track. Like I don't have the stats to quantify it, but they do. Like, you need to be that holistic person, and I think that's one of the benefits of yourself. You know, you looked at all those things. You undersold yourself on, like, you got a construction management degree. I haven't heard that be said on it. Any of your post games runs, but there's a fair bit to you, mate, apart from just being a superstar.
And I found so much value on going through that clarity stuff, because what almost mattered to me more than sports, I don't think people realize, like, I enjoy running, I enjoy sports, I'm very competitive, but what mattered to me more was my outside things, like my relationship with my family and all these things. So when going through that clarity, kind of made sense, and I really appreciated a little bit more. And then there's this idea that you can overtrain physically as an athlete, but then do you also think we can overthink the mental part of things and overdo it at the same time? And what would it look like, overtraining? Obviously, overtraining your body would look like injury, or yeah. And what would the mental side be?
Look, I definitely think. I was never at international level as an athlete, but I like to. You know, I was a decent runner back in. Day, and I still try to trot around and help out.
What's your PB?
It's a 150, so for an 800. So, and as Benny would know, my 19th quickest time is also 150 points. So there shows I needed a bit of mindset work back then. But I think, look, yeah, overthinking was definitely, it's a bit of almost a paralyzing thing, and then getting anxious. So, like, towards the end of my running, I'm still running, but towards the end of my competitive career, I probably got much better mentally, but there was some things towards the end where I'd think about things too much. I'd get too pumped up and kind of use up too much mental energy before the race, and then be quite flat for a race. So I think it's a bit of a delicate balance of knowing how to manage it. But it's funny, because you talk about the mental, and, like, so often I see for years that if someone doesn't perform in a big meet, they only think, okay, I needed to train harder, like physically train harder. That's the default. It's not, okay, what are some other things I can do? And, you know, you've incorporated the mindset stuff, you've incorporated Pilates, the extra gym you've done, all those extra things you can do. It's not physically, you could probably run as fast as you did this year in Rio, but you've added all those other components to yourself for that. But I think, yeah, mental fatigue would be big. It would be big for you over in Europe. Now, especially after the games, like when you win in Poland, that really showed me, wow, this guy is super, super strong mentally at the moment, because Dobie couldn't, like, yeah, you said in one of your lives, he and I might have been celebrating pretty hard after his bronze medal, and he might, but I think it showed, like, that's kind of the down after competing at a high of the Olympics, and you were still able to run and to run really well.
Yeah, and one of the things I enjoyed the most, I think we're speaking, maybe it was 2 years ago, and I've started incorporating this after every race, and it was the idea that to reflect on each race was kind of the same. I think you said, I had a bad race. You just said, look, write three things you did well, and then there was three things you could do better or learn from. Yep. And then I said, what about a good race? And you said, you apply exactly the same thing.
Yep.
So I found that really interesting, how you deal with a loss and a win is exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all part of the process. Yeah. I think it was in 2019, I think you ran on the Saturday and you ran 149. Would have given me a chance in that race, mate. 149, but you were yeah, you were pretty gutted, and you had a race on the
win. I ran 150. Yeah, I remember.
There you go. I would have had you, maybe.
You would have had me, I think.
But yeah, you were really gutted, and I think that was either a Saturday or a Wednesday, and you had a race a few days later, and that was your last chance to run the qualifier. And yeah, we just kind of tried to focus on that and like focus just on things that were within your control. You couldn't go back and run the race again. And yeah, what, 3 days later, 4 days later, you ran the qualifier and we're off to Doha. So yeah, as I said, that's, it kind of shows you're in the same physical shape, but it's just that. And I think, yeah, it's important to, you know, people get bogged down by the negative, and it's more about, well, let's just work out what you can do constructively from that. So from, if a race doesn't go to well, okay, what can you do constructively? Likewise, something goes well, okay, let's focus on a good thing, but also focus on something that could be a little bit better. And I think, yeah, it was funny. I was laughing after your heat in Tokyo, and you spoke to me. And then, yeah, basically I said, quoted one of our foes, the Black Mamba, and I said, yeah, job's not finished. And
yeah,
like, everyone was like, oh, this guy's running the qualifier, he's, you know, going to the semi-final, all this. I'm like, well, you're here for bigger things than that. So,
yeah,
let's just focus on next. Job's not finished yet. And that was
kind of... Were you concerned at all after the heats that I'd be used too much energy and then going to the semi-finals?
No. It was a bit... Because we talk a lot about it. Obviously, Justin sets the race strategies and things like that with you, but yeah, because we talk about it a bit, it was a bit surreal in the heat and in the semi watching it. You the moves that I would make if I was in your brain at that exact, we were just completely in alignment. Everything you did, like I would have, you got yourself into a position in the heat to be in an automatic qualifier. That's the most important thing the whole way through it, I feel, especially for yourself. So just tick. I didn't think anything. I got you added to the market to win the final, mate, in the betting agency, so it's fair to say I was pretty keen. But and then in the semi, when down the back straight you're going to go past AROP in the second lap, and then you waited, and the second you waited I knew you'd win the semi final because you were just going to save it until the home straight, and then you did what you did. You did tell
that's,
me
that's to- another thing I want to speak to you about. Some of my best races, the question I often get is, what were you thinking? And I think some of my best races, I've never thought, it was almost like automatic, because I think in a race like that, especially where time matters a lot, if you're thinking, you're losing time. So like everything has to be automatic, but it's not accidental at the same time. How important do you think, well, how do you even do that? Because like sometimes I do that in my best races and I just don't know how it's done. And then sometimes when I'm thinking is like, make a move, it's already too late. As soon as I thought that someone's already made it and it's gone past you.
Yeah.
What kind of mental strategies can you apply? I know you talk a lot about breathing technique and visualization and self-talk and stuff like that. But when you're actually in the race, completely different ballgame.
That's right. I think for yourself and the way that the skill set of your body is, you know, you're not a 44-second runner. You like to run the first 200 of a 400 like you're a 44-second runner, but you're not
the confidence
at this point. But I think, mate, it is purely confidence for you. I've always said to you that I'll get up in the middle of the night and watch your race in Europe, and after 50 metres I can know whether I can turn it off and go back to sleep. It's it's always been about you and the confidence, and I think that's why, like, you've for a number of years, and I hope you don't mind me, but like a number of years in Australia, you've obviously dominated, or there's been some couple of good runners up there with you. Then you've gone over to Europe, or you've gone to Europe before the championship, and you run against the big names, and you've run, you know, you haven't been as assertive or as confident in your own. You've positioned yourself mid-pack or towards the back and things like that, and I've been trying to drill it in for a number of years that you need to run each race as if you were running against seven 150 runners, and really just be confident and put yourself in the right position. And that's why for me, your race in Nancy on the 6th of something like that, July, anyway, your first one in Europe, when you actually, it was the first time I saw you against that field, not care about who they were and just went for it and then ran away from them. That was a big thing. And I think for yourself being 63 kilos of pure muscle, 63, not 61.
Pure muscle.
But yeah, being 63 kilos, it's good to not be in a lot of traffic, okay? And it's easier to make some moves when you're towards the front. And I think being towards a bit of a front runner, which has taken a bit of a while for you to mentally get to, has made a big difference for you. And yeah, you're ready. You've done all the work outside of the physical to be in that clear position in the straight, to be able to just, you were thinking it, but it had come almost, it was almost second nature because of how confident you were against the rest of them and, and, you know, all the work you'd done. But as you said, it's not an accident. I mean, you went, I think you, JT, JR and me and Joey all thought, yeah, at least final, and then anything happens in a final. So I think having that confidence also made you just make those moves without thinking too much about it.
Yeah. And then there's the physical part. It's always easy kind of measure. Like, I know if I'm running 400, I know like to measure it by time.
Yeah.
And like same as the 800 and like strength work, you can measure it by like weights and stuff, how much you're picking and whatnot. But I mean, the mental part is hard to kind of measure. How do you measure it? Like how do I know what I'm doing is kind of working? Like
it's a good question. And it's a tough one and it's a tough one that makes it not get kind of wider spread acknowledgement and kind of adoption. Very few people would do kind of the mindset stuff because they can't see the tangible benefits that they see of thing. But I do know that I've worked with yourself and I've worked with another athlete in the Commonwealth Games who went PB in his Brad, who went PB in his heat, PB in the final, fifth in the Commonwealth, going in like 16th. Yeah. And then yourself, PB, fourth in the Olympics. So it's far from all being mindset, but I know the role that it plays in that because of that. So I think that's rewarding, but I think from, you know, I'm one of your good friends, definitely. I'm one of my groomsmen, but I think from a mindset thing, the thing that's been as pleasing for me over the last month for you is it's not just about your running. So it's just seeing how much of an epic role model you are for your family and the Sudanese community, but much more than the Sudanese community as well, like all of Australia. And everyone was like your family in their lounge rooms, maybe with a few less people in where I am in Melbourne, but would have loved to catch up with Justin and watch it. But like, yeah, so I think it's measurable in all those factors, mate. It's measurable to see you on the front page of the paper, all the major papers and things like that, and the difference you made because of that. But yeah, it's there when you know it and you know the involvement and you know the difference in how you're performing and how confident you're running. But it is hard to say you ran 2 seconds quicker because of mindset, and that probably prevents people from doing it as much and limits them. So I think it's because of the acceptance you had of its importance is why you've benefited. And I think that's a credit to you to say, you know what, you know, I'm fittest I've ever been. That should be enough. And you've gone, no, I need to add a few strings to my bow to this. And you have, and mindset's one of them.
Yeah. And then how do you think it can be improved or like, get athletes, I guess, to see the value in it, because, you know, if it's important, but if someone doesn't see value in something, then they're probably not going to do it. And more than that, if they do it, it's just not going to work because you've got to believe it.
That's right. Yeah, you have to buy in. If you don't buy in, there's no point because it's, you know, part of the program is developing those habits, those rituals and the standards, which are kind of with you forever. Look, I think people are one of the big challenges from the mindset thing is people think, I don't know, but they think it's a sense of weakness if they have someone to help with the mindset and the performance stuff. They kind of think that that's on them, and that's probably the biggest challenge. People think that it's just their responsibility to be able to deal with that, and they should be strong enough. whereas people are always happy, like from a physical standpoint, to train and to do the training and to have a coach, to try, like a physical coach, have a Justin or similar, probably have that, whereas they kind of think, oh, yeah, no, I should really be able to do that part, or that shows that I'm weak, but it actually doesn't. It shows that you're willing to do everything it takes to put yourself on that start line in the best possible shape. I think that's the challenge, but I think if people truly, you know, part of the course as well is kind of limiting beliefs and things like that. If people think that, that they can't have help with that for whatever reason, that can stop them from doing it. But it's just something that, I'm not articulating it as well as I could, mate. But I think if you're willing to do everything and finish your career knowing that you've done everything, this is something that you should have a look at, definitely, because, you know, the proof's in the pudding. It clicked for you in 2021. It didn't click for you in 2019. Not in Doha, you ran more, a bit more assertively and got into a little bit of push and shove. But, you know, there was a difference from you. And yes, inexperience had a big thing. You got more physical training. You were in great shape. And, you know, taking all these extra things on that, even things like the Pilates, I know you might talk about that. All these extra 1%ers that you've done got you into the best possible shape and might have surprised Australia and Australian athletics, which certainly didn't surprise me.
Done
all the work. And no, we talked to, like, I was going to come over last year if it was on in 2020, but would it become fourth 2020?
No, absolutely not. I said, and I'm honest about it. I said, having the extra year was big for me, you know, and you can measure that because 2020 I ran 144 once. Yeah. And after that, I was struggling most of the season.
Yeah.
But it was still a lot better than 2019.
Yeah. So you're getting there. And then, that just shows the process, doesn't it? That it's not, you can't just do it instantly and say.
Absolutely not. And then, you know, speaking about limiting beliefs, that's usually so deeply rooted in people. Like, I guess the question is, how, like for other coaches, how would you, if something's so deeply rooted into you, how do they get their athlete to believe otherwise? Because then that becomes down to, I guess, culture and the way they grow up. And you know, I mean, Justin himself, he coaches athletes from, like, there's so many different nationalities in our squad, right?
That's right, yeah.
And there's so many different belief systems. And like for me and Joe, to be honest, we never saw value in sports psychology. It's just, it wasn't a thing growing up. It's like, it's not a thing. In fact, in 2016, when I was in Rio and met a sports psychologist for the first time, I told Justin, I didn't want to speak to him. Like, I mean, not in a rude way. I just didn't see value in it.
Yeah, it's a good one. Look, limiting beliefs, I mean, there's the belief on what's important, but a lot of them can even be traced back to, I mean, for you would have had a lot of very interesting situations as has been well versed in the media.
How do you get someone to change their belief system? It's tough.
Yeah, it's very hard. And look, I think part of the, so I did a, I'm a neuro-linguistic programming practitioner. I won't go into too much detail on this, but Anthony Robbins and Tony Robbins is probably one of the more famous proponents of that. But with limiting beliefs, it can be tracked back to your childhood, be it, as I said, your childhood, which is a bit, you know, well documented now, and it would have been definitely a challenge. And you know, when you came to Toowoomba after all you'd been through and didn't know the language and had to adjust and things like that, there would have been things. But even for myself or for similar people, like you can track it back to they were 5 or 6 in their grade 1 or grade 2 classroom and the teacher asked them the question and they put their hand up and they got their question wrong and everyone laughed at them and something so innocuous and so small, and then that person grows up with a bit of a fear of what other people think, and then that translates in a race to not wanting to go for it 100 metres out in some interclub meet or some race meet because of what, sorry about that,
because of what people might think, or people might laugh at them for having a crack. Like it's the connection is so weird that things can track back to that. So it is a big challenge, and you just need that. You need the athlete open to doing the right thing with that, and to being prepared to be vulnerable. I think that's a big thing for Peter Bowl for me from when I met you. Even I didn't meet you until after Rio, but just the preparation to be vulnerable and kind of listen to what other people had to say, and I think that's been a key. But for their athletes, it can be a long process. It can be a lot of communication. But you know, I do think the NLP techniques and the mindset techniques that we've done are pretty important as well. And it's sometimes it can't just be done through a conversation. You kind of have to go into that subconscious and work out what the reasons are behind it.
Yeah. And then I guess another good question is, you know, sports so focused on winning, you know, I'm focused on winning, you know, I know a lot of people say, it's a process, the process, the process, the process. But if you lose, you're not really thinking about the process, right? Gotcha. And I think it was one time I was doing probably a school talk to a primary school, and one student put his hand up and he said, how many medals do you have? And I couldn't remember. And he said, how many races have you lost? And I had no idea, or how many races I've won, and I had no idea. And then at that point, I actually did realize, in the moment when I did win, it mattered.
Yep.
But like, I don't remember where my medals are, but I remember every single story that I've had during that journey. Like 2015, going to Europe, I remember meeting my uncle for the first time. You know, 2016, being in Rio, I remember going to the warm-up track and seeing the different athletes and getting excited about being in the village. 2017, being in London, stuff like that. And so I guess my question is then, you know, what's important, winning or the process or both?
Well, you're all in the game to win. You're not happy if, well, there was all a pit in our stomach when you crossed the line fourth. We'll be honest, in that inner circle, yeah, there was a pit in the stomach when you came forth. But it is a simplistic way to look at it. The way that you've grown in every facet of your life over the last 2 or 3 years that we've done it, but since I've known you, since the last 5 or 6 years, like it's that is more phenomenal than any result can be. So I think whilst we're striving to win, the process of all the gains you've got in yourself from a racing level, an athletic level, but in every other facet of your life, is that's as pleasing. Like it brought me as much joy to see you get the acknowledgement of what an individual you are, as much as if you won the gold medal, if that makes sense. So I think, yes, the goal is always, you know, you're a winner, you've got that winning mentality, but you know, you're smart enough guy to look back at things and say, wow, look at what I've come, look at what I've experienced. You know, you're humble enough to know, hey, you're even being able to be outside of Australia and being able to compete and do those things. And I'm allowed 5Ks out of my house once a day. So it's like, you know, you strive for your goals, but you acknowledge, as you do from a good and a bad run, you acknowledge what you did really well and what you can do better. And I think coming fourth was an amazing achievement, and we'll look back at it soon, more glowingly than we did when you crossed the finish line. But that not being that gold medal is going to drive you to do more of the same over the next 3 years ahead of Paris. And, you know, you've already got that confidence now that you've shown the world, started by showing France in the start of July. You've shown the world, and, yeah, it's going to be a pretty exciting next 3 years for you, I think, while you chase that gold.
Yeah. Chasing goals. Goal setting has always been really important. I guess the normal process of setting SMART goals, you know, realistic, measurable, and all that, time framed. I guess if an athlete comes up to you and you're a mental coach,
yep,
and says that he wants to make an Olympics, but you know it's not realistic, do you tell him it's not realistic? Or what do you do? You know, because that's what they believe. Are you crushing, yep, their dreams? Or How do you deal with that?
It's a good question. Look, I think I would do what I could do to get them as far as possible. I think I'm not here to limit someone's dreams and goals. I think that if there's someone that, say an 18-year-old version of me that probably was never going to probably make the Olympic Games, right? If I could say to them, I'd just get them to use all the skills they could to get the most out of themselves and the best out of themselves. I probably, I look back on my running career and think, I'm not proud of it. I probably should be, but I'm not proud of it. I didn't feel like I got the most out of myself. I think if I can just help each athlete get the most out of themselves towards their Olympic goal, if that doesn't mean they get the Olympics, but they run, except they run out of their skin and, the rest of their life is thriving as well. Because as I said, I don't just focus on the track. Like then that's going to be a good outcome. But yeah, there's only three spots in the 800 in Australia and three spots in other countries, so not everyone can make it. But I've got two sons just born, so in 20 years that there'll only be one spot available. But I think I'm just in the process of trying to get a person to get as close to their goals as possible. But a lot of it's on them doing all the work outside of the mindset stuff, all the physical, all those 1%. It's like things like Pilates that you and Joe started, 18 months ago?
Yeah.
All these 1% is that they can get the most out of themselves. And I think that's where your previous thing about winning the gold medal, like it is, yes, we all tried to win the gold medal and make the Olympics, but it's pretty rewarding when you can look back on your career and go, wow, I achieved all that from my ability in some instances, but also I got to experience all these things as I chased it. And I'll tell you what, like the sport of athletics or any goal that you're just chasing, it does make your life a lot better because of that, I think, because you just, once you start to harness on things, it kind of, flows out to other things of your life and similar things in your life start to kick goals. Like your business that you've been, business opportunities that we've talked about for years that we've kind of put on hold until Tokyo, and now it's time to work through on that, and that's exciting for you as well.
Yeah. And I guess the next one is sacrifices, because we just spoke about business and as athletes, do you think we should, they say you should focus on other things, and like we just spoke right now, it's good to put things on hold and focus on one thing.
Yeah.
Like I can't remember who, someone last week, and they said they put their studies on hold during the Olympics.
Yeah.
There's these sacrifices that a lot of people make. I guess the question then is, how important to know if you're going to make it or those sacrifices going to pay off or not? Because you can't really know, right?
No.
You can't really know. Like I didn't know. Like I was confident I was going to make the final, but I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the tough thing, and that's why it is risky, and you didn't have the luxury of doing nothing apart from just being a full-time athlete. You got rent, you got to pay rent. You weren't having all those luxuries. It is a risk that you have to take, unfortunately. I think but again, that kind of separates the people, and that's why there was eight people in that final. I'm sure more than eight people sacrificed, but it's just all those components of extra things you need to do. And I think, you need to be held to account. I think, 8 months ago you were considering construction opportunities in Perth. And I was like, no, just come back, do what you need to do for this Tokyo. You're going to be, you're 27 now. That's right, isn't it? 27?
Yeah.
You're 27 now. You'll have 30 years or 40 years to do in the construction industry. Let's just focus on what you're here for. And I think that's also the vision that you talked about at the start. Like if your vision's clear on what you want to do, then it makes those sacrifices almost kind of second nature. But that being said, it was a sacrifice. You've foregone a lot of cash working to make sure that you're in the best possible shape for Tokyo. And you know, credit to you, look at the results. You might not have done it, but you did it. You know?
At the same time, it creates a lot of pressure, which we have to speak about. And yep. You know, certain athletes talk about pressure. And I mean, it was the first year this year I didn't feel any pressure.
Yep.
Like, I mean, normal question is asked, do you feel pressure? It's like, no, I don't feel pressure. Like, I know what I'm getting into.
Yep.
But pressure, I guess, you know, I think you sent me a book. Was it Michael Johnson, maybe?
Yep.
And I think he's saying pressure is actually a privilege. Being able to have pressure is a privilege.
Yep.
But I mean, he's Michael Johnson. He deals with it differently. I guess, is there a normal way to deal with pressure?
I think it's unique to the individual, but I think one of the keys that I've tried to do is just focus on the task at hand, which I think is what you did in Tokyo. And what I mean by that is you're really your race tactics. Like you're able to, you know, put things to the side. Like Australia was going crazy. I did my bit to not talk to you for the last 24 hours. Even though I would love to, but it was going crazy for you. And you know, AOC did a good job of shielding that, but I could tell from your post-race interview that you'd seen some of it. But I think it's the ability to just focus on what's in your control at that moment and being in that moment and just the race tactics. And I think for you, that was why like you ran the race tactics to what Justin said. And that like is it probably years of experience of racing. It's the mindset work you did and being able to get yourself into a relaxed state, which you did through breathing or you can do through anchoring or different exercises. And then just focusing on what's in your control, and that's okay. I'm going to, if it's slow, I'm prepared to take the lead. I'm going to put myself in a positive position early. I'm doing that. I'm leading. I had no qualms with that. Still thought you were doing everything right, and I think you probably thought that as well, and you stayed relaxed. I think I've seen you run previously in previous years where you've run the tactics, but you didn't believe the tactics. So I've seen you kind of, I don't know how to articulate how I've seen your body, but kind of rigid in a way.
Switch off.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You were like, you could see like your mind like not really believing it versus mm-hmm. like now you could just see that flow and you're just there and you believe it. But I think from a pressure standpoint, just focusing on what's within your immediate control there and trying to stay in the moment. I think it's probably, and I've never been in the situation, mate, but it's probably you know, having no crowd there as well, maybe that was an assistance as well to be able to stay in the moment and focus on what you need to do. But that benefit was there for the other eight guys in the final as well. So hard to say.
Yeah, that whole crowd situation, it's usually when we do a race with crowd and stuff like that, you can't block the noise out regardless. But I think if that stadium definitely had crowds, it would add a little bit of nerves and whatnot. And I wasn't nervous though. And I think I was speaking to James and I was just calm. And usually I get nervous a little bit. And then when I get to the track, it's like as soon as I get ready to get to the track, the nerves are gone. That's been previous races and whatnot. Yep. And I don't think I was nervous once during that race.
Were you surprised you're in the final?
No, I was not surprised one bit because, yep. I mean, I saw it, like I spoke about it and I mean, no one thought I was going to be in the final. No one thought I was going to get out of the heat. Like, I guess on the write-ups and stuff, like there was no like Peter Bowles contender and whatnot.
Yep.
So to everyone, it came out a surprise, but it wasn't a surprise to me. And I think if it was, I would have got knocked out in the semis because I would have been shocked that I got through the heats and then I would have been knocked out in the semis. So no, I wasn't surprised. And part of it is just because I saw it. I don't know. I saw it. And I guess that clarity we spoke about. And and then there was no limiting beliefs either. And I guess going back to your, you know, your program, you know, we have clarity and we have limiting beliefs. What's the following steps?
So really, creating a vision. So it's that vision, as I said, on all kind of components of your life. It's around removing limiting beliefs. You know, I'm not good enough. We'll care what other people think. Those are two of the most common things that will impact people in every aspect of their life. Then it's really about habits and rituals and setting things up on the daily for yourself, the goals. And for you, I think one of the big ones we always talked about was gold standard, where, you know, every training session needed to be a gold standard and things, you kind of lived up to that mantra to do that all the time. Then the next step would be the peak performance state. So as you kind of said, and it's called anchoring. So it could be like breathing, or you could do a weird physical tick on your body that just gets you into the zone. So what do I mean by that? You sit down with me and you get yourself into a state, or you visualize the success, and then you attach a certain physical anchor to it, and then you do that over time, and then you can be on the warm-up track or you can be at the start line, and you do that physical thing and you're in that zone. So I think that's helpful. And then the last couple are really around positive and negative experiences, which you talked about earlier, like focusing on one or two good things and one or two things to improve, and then just moving on, and then not dwelling on the negatives. Or you know, you had more races after Olympics, so you didn't focus too much on the positives, go too hard. And then you kept on going. You ran over to Europe, and then you won again in Poland, and got one more to go next week.
Yeah. And just like physical training, we train about six times a week.
Yep.
Speaking about everything you just spoke about, you know, then do you incorporate into your training program, or do you just do it randomly? And because I mean, repetition matters.
Yep.
And I think we both love Kobe, and he says that all the time, you know, Kobe Bryant.
Yep.
You know, it's just, he says it so simply, you know, he spent so much hours training, you know, and it's just easy math, and that's why he's better than everyone else.
Yep.
And then funny enough, he's I think his mental trainer was the same as Michael Jordan, Tim Grover.
Yep.
So those people saw a lot of value, obviously, on mental training and stuff like that. But you can, I guess I could never find information of how often he did this mental training. And because you're not just going to do it 1 week and
that's right,
just going to be there.
Yeah.
It's not, maybe not even 6 months. We don't know the time duration. Then is it, do you just incorporate into a schedule?
Yeah, look, there's certain things in the course that, you know, you get constant daily reminders from yourself of what that vision looks like, and you know, development of vision boards or things like that. They're basically a constant reminder for you of where you want to get to. And there's a certain level of accountability that the individual needs to have, but it's a two-way street. It's something that, you know, the course itself can go for as long as it takes the individual. It could be done in 6 weeks, but to be done well probably takes a lot longer than that. And then it's just, being held accountable and working with you and when you need it and when you want it. Sometimes when you don't want it, I'll push a bit, and vice versa, I'll give you space when you want space. But it's just adopting it as part of your life. And I think, you need those reminders in there.
I guess just to wrap it up, the final question is the idea of, I guess, maximizing one's full potential, and which is really important. And I think it's both off and on the field sports, you know.
Yep.
So like, I guess the question then is, how can one maximize their full potential? You know, I guess you gotta know your potential at first. Yep. And just like athletics, I don't think I started pretty late. I started at 17, but there was a lot of potential and there's a lot of talent there. But then you have to recognize that, and then you have to work towards it, and you have to do the work and all these things to maximize one's full potential. But how do you even know the limit to one's full potential?
Well, it's one thing that I'll always push with anyone, because I challenge that I challenged even a couple of years ago, like we'd been talking about this a little bit, but I challenged 2 years ago whether you thought you'd come fourth at the Olympics. So I think the process for myself, but the process for any athlete, is to just you want to look back at your career and say, you know what, I gave it everything. I did everything I could, and that were the results I got, and be happy with it. And you hope everyone is happy with what their end results are. But I think it's just the key of trying to, all these extra little 1%ers that all add up in time, and all these things that, you know, the Kobe's, but you know, if all the superstars of the sport, of any sport, that people think that it seems to come kind of naturally, and it's not actually that these guys were the hardest workers and set the highest standards. Like when I watched MJ in The Last Dance, was I surprised that he was like not a nice teammate? Not at all. Was I surprised that Kobe wasn't a nice teammate? Not at all. Because these guys had set standards for themselves to get the most out of themselves and look back on their careers and say that. And I think it's just about for an individual where they can, like not settling, and they'll get the most out of themselves when they set high standards. I think that's been the long lasting legacy. When we haven't been speaking every day over the last 2 years, but you set those standards, and that was about those kind of rituals and things like that. Yes, the vision drove you, but every day you were doing things. And my question for you is that there was something that happened for you between November and January in Perth that flicked the switch. Do you know what it is?
November and January.
So when you were the last couple of months you were in Perth before you came back to Melbourne, there was something that flicked the switch for you.
As in like in terms of training?
It all just started to come together. Training, you've always been a super trainer, but everything has just started to come together. Confidence?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. There was a lot of confidence. I guess I had a lot of time to think in quarantine too. I was locked in that room for 2 weeks, and I couldn't do much other than, you know, I did the bike workouts and whatnot, but I really had to decide what I wanted to do, because, you know, I didn't get into athletics out of passion, and that's not a bad thing. You know, I got into athletics through a teacher and through someone seeing what I was good at. And I stayed in it because of the opportunities that were coming out of it as well. Like I struggled so much to watch races. And I remember we were speaking about this, and you say you got to be a student of the sport. But I struggled to watch races, and they would only go for like 800s. Don't go for that long; they're under 2 minutes. Yeah. But I struggled to do that. I struggled to wake up, and I've always kind of been real to myself. And I didn't watch it. If I didn't want to watch it, I didn't watch it. Like 2016, I didn't know who I was racing against. You know, it wasn't until 2020 that I really started understanding the sport and understanding the people, understanding splits and stuff like that. You know, I guess that all kind of came together with that single decision that, okay, well, I guess I was always kind of mature, but I was a little bit older, and I've experienced everything I wanted to experience, like traveling the world and seeing everything in different lenses. And like, there was so many possibilities. It wasn't just about running. Like, and the thing for me was, well, we didn't have any family holidays and whatnot. Like, I remember speaking to Joe in 2018 when he broke the Australian record. I was like, man, like if we weren't running, we wouldn't be in Monaco, we wouldn't be in Europe and seeing all these things. So all that came together. It's like, okay, I've been traveling the world for 6 years, 5 years, 6 years. I've experienced everything. I've seen people, collected stories. Now it's time to kind of focus on this thing. And I really wanted to because I figured I could. And then I think that single decision changed everything.
And just, yeah, and one thing about one of our guys we love, the late Kobe, is I remember I tagged you in something online, I don't know, over the last, I think since he's passed, but like mid last year, where it was this excerpt that he had in regards to how much of a student of the game you have to be one of the greats. He had read every page of the NBA rule book given to umpires to know where the referee would stand, to know what he could do when the referee couldn't see and could see him.
That's obsession. That is. Yeah.
But that shows that when he does all that training, it's not all, you know, shooting hoops and shooting baskets and things like that. That just shows, you know, and Kobe's what an example he is, but of just, yeah, how dedicated and how all those little things add up, and how things like, you coming fourth of the Olympics and the guys that came first, second and third, none of that was a surprise. Like none of that was a shock. They'd prepared everything of them to give them the best chance.
And I guess what really did help me at the same time too is having that strong support team and people that are passionate. Like Justin loves the sport. Justin gets up to watch Diamond League races, and Joe gets up to watch Diamond League races, and they know splits. They know everyone. Now, it was funny, I think it was 2019, I was with Joe in Leuven, And Chez, King Chez, was kind of quizzing us on all these. He had these pictures of all the guys he kind of beat in school while he was in Eugene, Oregon. And Joe would name all the people, and I couldn't name a single person. And these are like cross-country runners. And I was just like, man, I think that's kind of going to change. And the more you know, the more confidence you kind of get. Yep. So then it becomes that. And what I appreciate the most having JT around was how much inside knowledge he had and the stories he would share from, I mean, world-class athletes. He's had the best athletes to ever do it, like David Radish, Bernard Lagat, and all these stories from being in the circuit for so long. And I'm just like, man, it's actually kind of cool. Like, it kind of made me love it because I didn't come into the sports out of love. I came into it out of like winning and like just circumstances. So I had to really love it. And I wasn't really loving it like that. I was loving everything that came with it.
Yep.
And I just happened to be good and talented. And I enjoyed training. Like I enjoyed training, but training wasn't going to be enough ever.
Yep.
I just had to be a little bit more than that. And you had to have people holding you accountable too. That support team is really important. You know, you have, like I have you, I have Justin, I have James. You have no idea how much difference it makes to have someone on the track when you're training. And that's the struggle with Perth. When you go to Perth, right, and you're training by yourself, like it's fine, I can train by myself. But that time when it gets a little bit hard and just having someone there,
yeah,
just watching, it's a huge difference. It just changes everything. And we speak about this with Joe. Like, I think Joe sometimes would say, man, training is boring without Justin, you know? And you just need someone just to be there.
People, you don't have to do it all by yourself. It is part of the crew. And I think you mentioned earlier about the sports psych and you weren't that interested in chatting to them in Rio. And then you've sports psych or something else or manager, but now you're open to getting the advice of others and you take that on. And I think that that is not as common as you would think it would be. Like, you know, a 144 Olympian listening to a 150 runner tell them a bit about 800s and what to do, a lot of people would not be interested. But you've
I humble myself. I listen to everyone.
That's right.
I take what I think is important. If I don't think it's important, I'll still sit there and listen and give them a chance, you know?
Yeah.
Because I guess if you think about it, like not throwing shade at Justin, but yeah. Justin didn't run 144. Justin didn't run 144, but he knows how to get you to run 144.
That's right.
A bit faster. That's right. Yeah. You know, so you just kind of got to humble yourself. And it's not about like, okay, they didn't run that time. And
yeah,
doesn't mean they can't help you, you know?
That's right.
And every person starts from somewhere, right? Yeah. Like Justin just didn't go into coaching straight away like 144 person. He came out of somewhere. Someone had to give him a chance.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So yeah, I guess humbling yourself is pretty important, which I think it worked to my advantage a lot because I'd listen to these stories from James. I'd pay attention to them to the point that I'd write them down.
Yeah.
And I'd go back and look into them and listen to these stories from you and Justin is just, you know, he knows times, knows everything. And it's just, I had to learn a lot. I had to commit to learning. And that's when it was just taking a lot of time. And at the start, it was just kind of boring. And I just fell in love with it. It just all clicked. And yep. We speak about this with JT. It's a beautiful thing when it all clicks. Sometimes you don't know why it clicked, how it clicked, but it just clicked. And 2020 was it. 2021 was it?
Well, it was it at this point. There might be more to come, hey?
Yeah, 100%. And I guess now it's just going back and figuring out why it all clicked and how to maintain that. Because I think that's the value is that consistency, you know, in competing. Yep. And we've been competing very consistently, but we've been happy, you know, outside of the track. You know, I don't think I was that happy in 2019. You know, I struggled being away from home. I never really called Melbourne home, although I kind of lived there.
Yeah.
So, and that stuff had to kind of change and you just had to make a decision. If it wasn't home, then you go back to Perth and, okay, maybe it's not going to work out in Perth then.
Yeah.
You know, so you had to, you have to focus so much on the ad side, and then the training kind of makes sense.
Yep.
And like, you know, the training is important too. We train very well, very consistently.
Yeah.
And it was funny, I trained less, as in like I did less running, but I did more of the other things. Like I think we're doing 2 gym sessions a week, but it was very consistent.
Yep.
And I speak to one of the physios from the VIS, Kev, and he asked, you know, you're strong this year. I said, yeah, you know, this gym thing kind of works. He says, I tell you every time the gym works. But it was finding a gym that you had fun with and enjoying it. And there's a culture that you kind of associate with as well. That mattered a lot. That mattered to a lot of consistency. You know, you had to find people that you kind of want to work with.
That's right. Well, I think even thinking about that, I know in 2020 in Europe, I'd say to you, when's your gym session? When's your Pilates session? And you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
And then this year I'll message you and go, oh, sorry, got a massage, I've got gym, or like, you know, all these things make a big difference. And, you know, as I said, and people might not have believed, but I got your good odds when I got you added to the markets to win the final, mate, each way, and backed you to win your semi-final. All these things that, you know, you've done all the work. As I said, there was some quantum change for you, and to maintain what you've currently got, wow, it's going to be very exciting next few years. And it's the credit, all credit to you. It's all you.
Mm. And my support team, 100%. Could not have done it without you guys and without so many people. The Triple J's I always quote.
Yeah.
It helps. It helps. You know, even right now, being in Europe without a training partner, Joseph, it's hard. Like coming back from the Olympics probably was the hardest part.
Yep.
And then, you know, previous years, you know, just having someone there, there's a lot of familiarity, and I have James here, which it helps a lot.
Yep.
You know, it makes a big difference. But I mean, I guess that's all I want to speak to you about. And yeah, it's been great to chat to you and picking your brain as always. Yeah. And I always do, so I do appreciate you for that.
I appreciate you, mate. Well, I'm very excited to see you whenever we see you in Melbourne. It might be not for a while, but we're pretty excited to have you over.
I haven't even seen the boys. It feels like this lockdown has been forever. So yeah. I very much look forward to it, and I look forward to keep, you know, growing physically and mentally at the same time. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Pete. Love you, mate.
No, thanks.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.